53 days after. Camino and I walk a long ways to a river the next day, and I wonder at how our Father split himself and his love and implanted us each with something of him, because the girl swims like a dolphin while I plop around in the water, holding on to big rocks and kicking my feet. And I feel competitive for a second, want to tell Camino I would dust her on the chessboard if she played. But I know this is petty. Swimming seems like therapy to Camino. Her shoulders drop, her skin glows. It is the closest to happy I've seen her since getting here. On the other hand, chess has never been stress relief for me. Chess is the definition of stress itself. My mind wrestling with every possibility and outcome. My thumb war with the pieces, trying to decide where they should land, does not seem half as smooth as Camino's backstroke. I push onto my back and float downstream. It is hard to remind myself I am not playing against my sister. We are on the same team, I tell myself, even if I don't actually believe that. 54 days after. The ceremony we had for Papi in New York is nothing compared to what is planned in DR. Tia and Camino arrange an entire party. Mommy looks on disapprovingly as a band of men in white show up with drums and tambourines, and it's a good thing the gravesite isn't too far from the church because dozens and dozens of people show up until we are a blur, a smudge of people dressed like ash advancing down the street. I borrowed a light-colored dress from Camino, and we walk down the street arm in arm. People sing songs I don't know. I think Papi would have loved us making such a fuss. At the gravesite, the casket is lowered, the earth again welcoming a song home. Mommy heaves as if she will jump in. The caoba trees bow low, the wood gleams. Words intoned, I lick sweat off my lip. Tia rocks back and forth, I cannot hold her. My sister grasps my hand. I feel her squeeze and do not let go. Hold tight. The ground ruptured. My father's body fills the hole. Dirt is thrown on the casket, filled up and made whole again, but not the same. Tia Solana begins the novena, the 9 days of prayer, immediately after the body is lowered into the ground. Mommy sits in a corner of the house, not praying, not moving. Tears steadily fall down her cheeks, but not a single sob pushes forth from her mouth. I touch her shoulder once, but she is holding vigil. I can't imagine how difficult it must be for her to be here. All the painful memories she must have. All the ones she will have after today. I try not to feel guilt for having made her face this, but it still twists me up to see how hard it is for her to look at this house, to speak to these neighbors, to imagine this life my father had. People come from all over to feast on the food we spent yesterday cooking, to pull rosary beads through their fingers and usher my father's spirit into heaven. And I wonder where his spirit has been this whole time, if only now is when we are all officially praying for him. Has he been here? Has he been here this whole time? Has he watched us wrestle with the gift and curse he left behind?
After the novena, all the neighbors fill plates of food. Everyone but Yahaira's mommy eats. She sits by the window, staring at absolutely nothing. Even Viralata is chewing a bone out back. I walk over to her, but stop before I speak. I know I am hovering. I am so unsure of myself around this woman, who probably wishes I had never been born. As if she hears my thought, She turns and pins me with her gaze. I noticed you were rubbing a hand on your chest, and Yahaira told me you've lost weight, I say. Her eyes fly to her daughter, who is listening to old Juanita tell one of her elaborate stories. I force myself to rush on. I don't want to seem like I'm sucking up to her. It's just so clear she's in pain. It hurts me to watch it. It reminds me of my own. It's just all studies show these are signs of high stress. The aches, the loss of appetite. Anyway, I fixed you a plate. You should try and sleep tonight. And remind yourself to take deep breaths. I wait. I know my tone is a presumptuous one she will berate me for. Instead, she reaches out and takes the plate I offer. A soft smile tugs at her lips. He always did say you would make a wonderful doctor. He had grand plans that you attend Columbia. He said once you were in the States, he wanted you close. We live right by the school, you know. And I don't know who is more surprised. Me at the future my father imagined without my knowing, or her at the disclosure. I nod and walk away, before either one of us says more. It seems we've arrived at peaceful ground, and I want her to have this memory when it is all said and done.
You should stop smoking those cigars. Where did you get it anyway?
Thea uses them in her ceremonies and always has some stashed in the house.
Ceremonies? What ceremonies?
Oh, girl, you got a lot to learn about this side of the family. Did you ever wonder about Papi's beads?
He didn't wear jewelry except his ring.
It was like he was two completely different men. It's like he split himself in half.
It's like he bridged himself across the Atlantic.
Never fully here nor there. One toe in each country.
Ni aquí, ni allá.
By the time the vecinos leave, it is after 11. Mommy goes to wash up, mumbling about sleeping in a house her husband once shared with another woman. She wanted to stay in a hotel, but I refused to leave, and she refused to leave me. Camino and I are on the patio, sitting in the rocking chairs, just as Camino comments that storm clouds are gathering. It is then that Tia Solana comes over and gives Camino a long, long hug. Lo siento that this is how you spent your birthday. I feel lightning struck dumb. Today is your birthday? Why would you plan a burial today? Camino shrugs and leans into Tia's petting hand. I can't believe I'm empty-handed for my sister's birthday. I go into the bedroom Camino is sharing with me and rummage through my suitcase. I have a pack of gum, some hair products she might like, my travel documents, Papi's papers that Camino might want one day, but nothing I can gift.
At midnight, it will be the end of my birthday and the day that Papi is put into the ground. Yahaira's eyes are swollen from crying. And I can tell she is worried that our relationship will be another thing we need to mourn and bury. Sometimes, I look at her and it hits me that she is the only person who can understand what I feel, but she is also at the root of the hurt I'm feeling. Her mother barely looked at me the whole day, and I know I'll have to go through with my plan. I'm 17 today. Yahaira tells me she is going to sleep. Her mother and Tia have already retired to the room they are sharing. Her mother looked bewildered all day, like a gallo who slept through the morning. But before she goes to bed, she reminds Yahaira she bought plane tickets for them to depart in 3 days. I think about the leaving, how my sister was left money, how my father's wife was left with a valid marriage certificate. And in a few days' time, how they will both try to leave me. It is a tiring thing to have to continue forgiving a father who is no longer here.
I go inside. I have a feeling Camino wants to be alone. In the living room, I stop still at the altar. Mommy and I have been ignoring the altar in the corner. I don't know much about saints or ancestors, only the rumors of sacrificing chickens and how it all relates to voodoo. I don't even know if that's what this is. Camino called it something else and says the prayers and sacrifices are important to having a relationship with the saints, having a relationship with those who sweep the way, nudge open the doors for us to walk forward, for us to walk through. Camino, or Tia, has placed a small offering of rum and coconut chunks, roasted corn on a small plate. I can't imagine my father kneeling or praying at the foot of this altar. And yet, I think about the silver coin he always carried in his pocket and how its twin sits on the altar here. I think about how he would always say something about San Antonio. And isn't that the statue by the door? My father hid this part of himself tight inside his pockets, but it still slipped through the stitching. I just never paid attention. I carefully pick up the frame with his picture, lift the candle. Mommy has decided we will return home in 3 days. Taped to the back of Papi's frame is an envelope of money. I wonder if this is the cash I sent last week. Is this what Camino is to survive off of?
In the bedroom we are sharing, moonlight peeks through the gathering storm clouds, and for a second, its light glows on Yahaira's dark face. I look at how beautiful she is, my almost twin. I feel like a fish Tia buys from El Mercado, gutted, my spine pulled out from my back. When I am sure Yahaira is snoring softly, I reach into her duffel bag, searching. But before I find what I want, there at the bottom, a marriage certificate. One with my mother's name on it, dated after both Yahaira and I were born. Her family was always first, the real one that I merely interrupted. I want to crumple to the floor. I want to crumple the page. Instead, I rip it up. All the stupid things my father did but never said. All these secrets and mysteries he kept. All these papers, papers, papers. Maybe I can fold these jagged scraps into a yola that will sail me across the Atlantic. Maybe I can string these dozens of words into a rope I can use to zip line to the States. I can't pay tuition or light bills or el cero with an old man's regrets. There goes the last thing I had of him. I grab what I originally wanted and leave.
I wake up. I am alone. And although nothing has shifted in the night, something feels off. Outside, the pattern of rain lands against wet earth, and I want to let it lull me to sleep. But I get up. I can't shake the feeling of wrongness. On the floor, half buried beneath the bed, is the ripped-up certificate of marriage I brought with me. I thought Camino might have wanted it. It was at the bottom of my bag. I realize I don't know my sister at all. If this was Dre, I would know how to wrap my arms around her and hug the mat away. If this was a newbie who lost a game, I would know what piece of wisdom I need to offer. But it's Camino. I know if I were her, this would not have been what I was searching for.
I am quiet as I leave the house, holding back tears. It's been clear to me since the beginning how it is that this must end. The quickly scrawled note I wrote for Tia is on the altar, the first place I know she will turn for solace when she realizes that I am gone. It is the middle of the night, too early to make my way to begin walking the 4 miles. Viralata, whines at my heels, and I scratch him softly behind an ear. There is one last place I have to see before I go. I am not dressed for travel. When I arrive at the airport in the morning, I know I will call attention. No suitcase, no backpack, no guardian. I only have my purse, the money, and the gift Yahaira does not know she's given to me. I will have to bribe someone to buy me the ticket. I will need to bribe someone to pretend to be my parent. I will say the person is an aunt or uncle. I will explain my parents are dead. It's possible I might be pulled aside if the agent decides to ask extra questions. I don't try to think that far. I am certainly not dressed for the beach, in my sneakers and long jeans, my hair bunned up tight to look like my sister's, but I have to come here to the water's edge, to the sand that has always hugged me close. My mother stood with me here and looked outward as she would tell me to wave at my father. It was here my mother would bring me to lay out a blanket as we made a meal of soft bread and hard cheese. This stretch of boundless land was where she would hold my hands and we would dance to the live music coming from the resort next door. I am crying before I know it. When the sun comes up, I must be hard-eyed, but in the glint of night, I say goodbye to my mother country, as the rain begins to fall. A rustling in the branches makes the hairs on my neck stand. No. 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 How did he know I was here? How does he always know I'm here? He must have been watching all this time. Your sister, she looks just like you, but has American written all over her. I wonder if I can make her acquaintance. I ignore him and take a step beyond his reach. Viralata at my feet growls low in his throat. The rain does not feel quite as gentle as it did. I tell myself the rain is the reason I'm shaking and not the threat to Yahaira. And not El Cero here, crowding my last hours. I can imagine what he sees in me, a trembling girl in sneakers and denim. Inside the purse I hold tight at my side is the only key to freedom I own. That, a small kit of makeup, and Yahaira's passport. The rest I left behind with a note. Money for Tia and Carlene, an explanation of the need to leave. El Cero brushes closer, and I tighten my grip on the purse. He's asking me a question, but his voice seems far away. I don't want him to know how much I'm carrying, but maybe I can ease this situation. I have money. I'll pay you what my father owed, half now and half tomorrow. Let it be settled. I don't want to make him angry. I want to guard my secrets close. I take a step back to move away from him. He rubs a thumb across his bottom lip. I don't know. I've had plans for you. But maybe the money would be enough. He owed me $2,000 for this upcoming year. I fiddle with the strap of my purse and he raises a brow. Don't tell me, Camino. You are walking around with that kind of cash? My hands shake in the bag as I try to figure out the right number of bills to get me out of here. My heart is racing in my chest. I grab what I think is enough and shove it at him. Here, this should cover half. I calculate quickly how much I'll have to cut back on to make my new amount stretch. I begin edging back toward the tree, ready to make a run for it, but Ercero's hands grab my sleeve. He stares down at the dollars like they are a crossword puzzle with the clue in a language he doesn't know. Why do you have this much cash? Were you meeting someone else out here? Why are you clutching your bag? Is there more? His strong grasp yanks at the bag, and despite my tight grip, he is bigger and stronger, and he wrenches it from me. He runs his hand through my bag, pulling out the embossed gold of the passport, the stark white of the envelope that holds my entire future. Why, Caminito? It seems you were trying to make a run for it. Without paying a debt? Tsk, tsk, I try to grab the passport and money, but he holds both high above his head like this is all a game, a middle school tiff. Viralata must feel my distress, because now he lets out a long bark before he races off into the trees. Camino, figured it out somehow. Tried to get away without making a payment? Tried to get away without saying goodbye? The storm clouds overhead cover the moon completely. Thunder sounds in the distance, and I wipe furiously at water on my face. The tides will rise quickly, but not as quick as my anger. You're such a fucking dirtbag. Un grosero, not worthy to bite the flea that bites astray. I don't know what converted you into this monster, but I bet your sister is turning in her grave. The words come out in a fast whoosh, but do not sound like me. When the lightning flashes, I see Edsel's face has twisted into an ugly mask. He grabs me by my blouse, pulling me up to my tippy toes. Spittle flies out his mouth as he yells directly into my face. Do not ever mention her, you uppity ugly bitch. And when he shoves me back, my foot twists painfully beneath me. Above me, Elcero puts the money and my passport, Yahaira's passport, into his back pocket.
As the thunder rumbles, I gather up the torn up pieces of the marriage certificate. I can tell from the stillness in the house, Camino isn't here. I don't know the rules of sisterhood. Am I supposed to try to find her? Am I supposed to leave her alone? The thought that she might be alone and angry on a night she should be celebrating her birthday makes me stand up and walk into the living room, stare at the altar. Papi, if you can hear me, help us both, for once. A folded-up envelope with Tia's name rests on the altar. I don't remember it being there before. Outside, the frantic barking of the mutt grabs my attention. He sounds as if someone is trying to attack him, but when I peek through the curtains, I see he's barking at the house. I can't help the feeling that my sister needs me, and for the first time in my life, I am actually here to help. As I turn to grab my phone to see if I can find her, I bang into a standing lamp that topples over. From the bedroom they are sharing, I hear shuffling, and then Mommy and Tia rush through the doorway. But Tia's brown face goes completely pale. She clutches a hand to her throat. ¿Y mi camino? ¿A dónde está camino?
The earth spins round and round like ballo dance, a trance. Advance across the mud, zoom into tree, skin a match. I want to detach from me. A man laughs. Am I laughing? He kneels in the dirt beside me, stomach sick, crawling, skin slick. Push away, kick him back, scratch at the eyes. Mouth open, cry for help.
Tia is shaking as I guide her to a chair. Mommy pours her a glass of water. I've seen enough crime shows to know we need to try and narrow down where Camino might have gone. I sent her money a few days ago. Mommy gasps, but is otherwise silent. Would she have left for the capital? I asked Tia, but Tia dismisses that with a hand. We have no family there. Although I feel like I'm betraying her, I offer. My passport is missing. At this, Mommy pushes up to her feet. She would pass herself off as you. Solana, we need to go to the airport. But Tia shakes her head again. It doesn't open until 4 a.m. The girl is impetuous, but she wouldn't walk the roads at this time of night. She would wait for the sun. Maybe her friend Carlene. She might go to her. But this time it's me who's disbelieving. She loves her best friend like a favorite doll, treats her fragile like. She wouldn't wake her. She wouldn't make her complicit. The three of us stare at one another until we hear the whine right outside the door. The dog must have found his way underneath the fence. Dia and I catch eyes at the exact same time. There is only one place Camino would go. Mommy pulls the car up as far as she can, but I am out the door before she even stops, running through the trees toward the water. I hear a low moan, like someone in pain. As the trees clear, I see Camino on the ground, thrashing against a man who kneels above her. She's kicking him in the stomach as he tries to hold her still. The sky has opened up. Rain drips down her face. They have not seen me yet. It is the first time I am glad to be taller and thicker than Camino as I rush out and run up behind them, shoving the man hard so that he falls into the sand. He angles his shoulder, and I can tell he wants to bum rush me. I crouch down to cover Camino's hunched and trembling body. She clumsily clings to my waist. Her blouse is ripped open, and like the dog frantically barking beside us, I bare my teeth at the man. You've been her sister for what, 2 days? You're going to want to mind your business. I ball my fist the way Papi taught me, thumbs outside. You'll want to leave Camino alone from now on. His face contorts in anger. He charges at me, but headlights flood the darkness. My mother's face peeks from the trees as Tia Solana jumps out into the clearing, her huge machete glinting in her hand. I trust she knows exactly how to swing it. The man takes a step back, tries to fix his face into something more innocent. He's going to try to lie his way out of this, I can tell. Even with the rain, the distant sound of lightning, I can hear Tia praying, her soft voice undercutting all the noise. She comes and stands by my side, murmuring under her breath. I bend down to help Camino to her feet, hold her to me with an arm around her waist. Camino is uncharacteristically quiet. I want to whisper in her ear, I know, I know, I know this fear. You're okay. I'm here. I got you. And the feeling is so clear, it chokes me up so much I can't actually say the words. The lights cut out from the car, and Mommy steps from the vehicle. She doesn't carry a single weapon, nothing but her cell phone and the rolitos in her hair. But you would think she was armed to the teeth, the way she pulls her shoulders back. And there, in her bearing, you see she is a general's daughter. She looks this man straight in the face. This girl does not exist for you anymore. She doesn't live here. You won't be able to reach her. Dia's praying gets louder, and she smacks the machete hard against her open palm. Behind me, Camino whimpers. Off the ocean air, wind is starting to churn faster. It smacks at the collar of the man's shirt. Dia's praying is now at full volume. Words I don't know, but I do know. I feel them in my chest. It's as if she silenced the night. Everything but the wind. And the wind has its own voice, and it has joined with ours. It buffets at the man's hair and clothing, and we are here. Tia, like a bishop, slashing her long machete. Mommy, the knight with rims. My body in front of my sister's body, queens. Papi, who I know is here, too. He did build that castle he always promised. Even the wind and rain and night, even the light, has come to our side. We stand for her, for each other, with clenched fists and hard jaw. We will protect Camino at all costs. We will protect one another. The man reaches into his back pocket, and I feel the fear in Camino's body. But Mommy cuts through it with her hard words. You don't want to mess with me. I am not a nobody. There is nowhere you can run where my family would not find you. Don't even think about it. Beside me, Camino finds her voice. Give me back what you took. All of it. And when Tia hisses through her teeth, the man throws a packet onto the sand. Keeping Camino behind me, I bend to pick it up. I don't know what convinced him. Mommy's confident belief in who she is and her own power. Tia's clear determination to kill the man if she must. Or just the belief that none of this is worth it. We stand there. Camino is crying into my back, and I'm shaking where I hug the arm she's wrapped around my waist. The moment he turns his back on us, Mommy's face fills with relief. She presses a trembling hand to her mouth before she shoos at me to get to the car. Only Tia is unmoving, unflinching, as she stares at the man walking toward the resort lights. I worry for a second that she might chase him down, but as if I said it out loud, she looks at me and winks. Everyone gets what they deserve eventually, mija. With glints in our eyes, dressed for dreaming, we walk back to the car.
I hold on to the person, the one who came to take me. When I look at her, I see lights, a bright blue glow from behind her. I hear a humming, as if coming from the wind itself, or as if the clouds swirl inside me, calling on me to breathe. A purple, black, red, burgundy light caresses my face. They are here to take me. They are here. I press myself closer to Yahaira, and behind her, the blue light becomes a woman dressed in Larimar, sharp knife in hand. She smiles, all teeth. The humming quiets. Tia, I realize, Tia's voice has called the saints. Tia's voice has come to take me. All these women here to take me home.
At the house, I help Camino out of her torn top. I try and reach for her jeans, but it only forces her to cry harder. So I slip her shoes off and help her sit on the bed. I run to the bathroom to grab a towel I used to wipe the mud off her feet. The moment she lies on her back, she rolls to throw up on the floor. Shock, Tia says. Who knows how long she was in the rain trying to think how to get away. Tia boils a cup of tea, sits gently next to Camino, gives her small sips as she pets her hair. I want to help Tia but have no idea what to do, and so I climb into the bed beside Camino on her other side, tuck my chin into her shoulder, throw my arm around her middle, let her know she is safe.
I am in between dreams. In one dream, Yahaira wraps around me, like one of those strangler figs. I imagine she is that tree absorbing me. I want to tell her I am sorry. I want to tell her she is welcome. But before I get the words out, I wake up in another dream. In this one, Tia has her face close to my face. Her face is covered in tears. I smell her warm scent of chamomile and honey. Feel her hands on my cheek. I am hers. I am hers. I am hers. She says, and she is right. I dream my father sits on the corner of the bed, his weight on the mattress, on my heart, his head in his hands. He looks like an old man. He is not supposed to be here. He is gone. He is gone. When I wake up this last time, sun peeks in through the window. Yahaira is entwined alongside me. I can feel her heart against my back. I am sweating, and I want to pull away. I want to bury in the safety. From the kitchen, I hear Thea's soft steps slow. Even from over there, she knows I am awake. I clear my eyes one more time, because I can't tell if there's a figure in the corner or if it is just a wet pile of clothes. But when I squint, I see Yahaira's mother dozing in a chair.
55 days after. The next morning, I find Mommy at the little table in front of the saints, drinking coffee. I do not sit down before I speak. She needs to come back with us, not because it's what Papi wanted, but because it's what she most needs, what we most need. Mommy keeps her eyes straight ahead, her finger rubbing the smooth rim of the cup. Mommy doesn't say anything in response. She finishes her coffee, stands up. She grabs her purse and drives out. There was so much I had left to say. That maybe a bad husband can still be a good parent. That maybe he tried to be the best he knew how to be. That he hurt her, got caught up. There's no excuse. But he is not here. He is not here. We are all that's left. Camino stumbles out of her bedroom, looking like she's been run over by a train. I know that Camino's pride is like ironing starch, and she sprinkles it over herself until it stiffens her spine. She didn't tell anyone about the tuition bills. She didn't tell anyone about the man stalking her. This whole time, she swallowed her words like bitter pills, not realizing they were slow drip poison. I do not know what is going to happen next, but I cannot, will not, leave without her.
Yahaira's mother comes back to the house after midday. And for some reason, I am waiting for a lecture on how I acted irresponsibly, how I stole from her daughter, how I need to return her money, how I am no fit sister to her child. I almost hope she does say any of those things so I can loose all the angry things I hope to say back. But Yahaira's mother does not say anything. She sits in the rocking chair next to mine, and our squeaking chairs hold their own conversation. I peek at her from the corner of my eyes. She is a beautiful lady, but the skin beneath her eyes is smudged with exhaustion. As if she feels my gaze on hers, she speaks. You needed a mother, and I wasn't sure I could be that to you. Your mother and I were friends, you know. We were good, good friends once. I thought I would look at you and see her betrayal on your skin, see your father's faithlessness in your eye. I did it to protect myself. I was so soft-hearted when it came to your father. I didn't want the sight of you to undo me. Yahaira's mother takes out a folder from her purse. She passes it to me. I scan the sheet quickly. It's an emergency appointment for a visa, scheduled for 3 days' time. I look up. The questions must be shining from my eyes. With us, you'll come with us. You cannot stay here. That man will come back. Angrier as they always do. It is not safe. Your tía agrees, and it is what your father wanted. The interview was scheduled for late August anyway. I went to speak with my cousin to ensure they could push it up. What I wanted. What I wanted. For so long. How bittersweet a realized dream can be flavored.
Does anyone ever want to leave their home? The fresh fruit that drops from their backyard? The neighbors who wipe their snot? Does anyone ever want to believe they won't come back? To the dog that sniffs their heel? To the bed that holds the echo of their body? Is there relief in pretending it is temporary? That one day it will be safe? That I will once again wave to the kind school bus driver that I'll hold Carlene's baby before he grows, having never known me. They have no palm trees in New York City, no leaves to shade me, to brush against my cheeks like my mother's hands. There's no one over there, alive or buried, who held me as a child, who cradled me close, who fed me from their table, who wiped my knees when I fell and scraped them. Here, despite the bad and ugly, is my home, and now I wish that I could stay. Does anyone ever want to leave the place they love? While Yahaida and her mother run errands, I join Tia on a round of the neighborhood. I haven't seen El Cerro in days, but both Tia and I keep our heads on a swivel. The last house we visit is the house of the old woman with cancer. I pet Viralata and order him to wait outside. I'm nervous of what we'll find behind the door. But when Tia knocks, I see she also pulls a key out. I look at her with a question in my eyes. One of the neighborhood boys installed a lock. He gave a group of us copies so we could get in and out. It is safer for her that way. Inside, I see the sheets have been changed recently, and a vase near the window holds field flowers. I put my hand on the woman's brow and she turns her head into my hand. When I press my fingers to her stomach, the lump there seems to have grown smaller. I shake my head at Tia. None of this makes sense. She squeezes my hand. Carlene comes over that night. She brings a small wrapped box and wishes me a happy belated birthday. I hold her tightly before I introduce her to Yahaida's mother. She had not met her at the funeral. Carlene must be surprised by the woman, but does not let on. She tells me Luciano has been breathing better, and he even cried for the first time. His lungs, clearer, stronger. I have hope he will live. We do not say the word milagro, but I know that like a flame, Tia wrought a miracle and Carlene nurtured it. I squeeze her hand, and an idea spins in my head. Tia refuses to leave here. She says she is needed, but she is going to require help when I'm gone, and she needs new blood to teach. Carlene's house is packed to the brim with people, but here is a house that will sit mostly empty, and an apprenticeship that she would be perfect for. Having Nelson around the house would be helpful, and Tia loves little more than a baby to cradle, a family to feed. I will broach the idea with Tia tomorrow. The saint in my ears whisper, "Si, mija, si, mija, si." Yahaida's mother takes me to the clinic to get a health report, the civil registry office to obtain a copy of my birth certificate, to make a copy of her marriage record that shows she is legally my stepmother. We spend hours in the rental car driving from here to there and back, Yahaida sleeping in at home or helping Tia. Zoila and I speak little on these trips, but when I'm humming along to a song, she turns up the radio. And when her face was red from heat in the clinic waiting room, I used a magazine to fan it. It is awkward, these familial ties and breaks we share, but we are muddling through it, with Yahaida brokering our silence when she can, and by letting the hurt between us soothe itself quiet when she can't. I dress nicely for the consular agency in Puerto Plata. I tug on my graduation dress that was my priest meeting dress that is now my visa interview dress. I am clothed in beginnings and endings, a lucky and unlucky garment. But isn't every life adorned with both? We will see what this black brings me today. Zoila sits in the interview room with me as her cousin asks me questions. When he asks about school, I tell him I want to study pre-med at Columbia. The consular officer tells us it will take a couple of days to process, but he shakes my hand warmly and gives Zoila a wink.
My mother and Camino leave the house every day preparing for her visa appointment. I let them spend the hours without me. I do not want to be a crutch for either of them to use to hobble. Instead, I spend time in Tia's garden and think of Dre with her tomato plants. Twice, Carlene has come over, once with the baby, strapped to her chest. He is a small boy, and when I stroke his cheek, he opened his eyelids and stared at me. This made Carlene gasp. She told me the baby is 5 weeks old, and she's been scared this whole time he would not make it. But his steady gaze on mine makes me believe this babe was born a warrior, and he isn't going anywhere. One morning, after Mommy and Camino climbed into the Prius, I walked down to her beachfront, glancing sideways to make sure I was not being followed, although I felt like I was being watched. I stood at the water's edge. I could imagine my father here. This wide world of trees and rocks and water, a kingdom he presided over. I could imagine him a boy in chancletas and a small t-shirt running here to dive and climb trees and imagine a great big world. I skim my feet in the water with my face stroked by the sun and pretend it is my father, hands on my skin, saying sorry, I love you, welcome home, goodbye. I forgive you, I forgive you, I forgive you, say the waves, say I.
The night after the consular visit, Yahaira tells me she has someone she wants me to meet. And since she can't possibly know anyone in this callejón that I don't, I know she means in the United States. I'm excited to meet your friends when I get there, I say politely. Ever since the night with El Cero, it's been more difficult to be snarky with her. She shakes her head. I want you to meet her before we arrive, and she wants to meet you too. My girlfriend, Dre. She says this firmly, looking me in the eye. And I know what she thinks. I will condemn her for being gay. Homosexuality is complicated here. I look at her right back. We should video chat with her. And she pulls out her phone, presses a name from the speed dial screen. Soon, a dark-skinned girl with short hair fills the screen. She smiles with all her teeth when she sees Yahaira. Hey, baby, 2 calls in 1 day? Lucky me. Yahaira turns the phone a bit so the girl and I are face to face. I pull back in surprise, not because of this girl, Dre, but because it's the first time I've seen our faces like this, side by side, almost pressed against each other. I clear my throat, suddenly nervous. This is someone my sister loves. If she does not love me, my sister might not either. Hello, Dre, I say. My English sounds a bit rusty. Dre answers back and asks me how I'm doing in excellent Spanish. Thank God she speaks it. Then she surprises me completely by changing locations. I follow her via the screen as she walks into a bedroom, then pulls away a grate that covers a window. Yahaira whispers to me. She wants to show you something on the fire escape. She loves to grow things. When the body holding the phone heaves through the window, I hear the loudness of honking cars and people yelling. The screen flips so I see a planter against a railing, then the light green buds aiming toward the sky. Dre's face again fills the screen. Yahaira told me your auntie is a healer and that sometimes you help. I thought starting you a little herb garden might help make you feel more at home. Moisture stings my eyes and I nod at Dre, then lean over to Yahaira, fake whispering in English. Where did you find her? And is there a clone of her somewhere that I could marry?
59 days after. The night before we leave DR, we sit around the table, the four of us, eating toasted cassava and butter. Viralata sits at Tia's heel the way he has since the night at the beach. Mommy says she thinks it would be good if when we get back home, we return to the counseling sessions. And I know it has scared her, how big the emotions of loss have weighed on our shoulders, enough for me to disobey her in a way I never have, enough for her to forget the kind of woman she once was, enough for Camino to thrust herself into unleashed danger. Tia does not say much, but she cleans crumbs from the corner of Camino's mouth, and she butters a piece of cassava that she passes to me like she has hand-fed me my whole life.
60 days after. At the airport, Tia does not cry, but I cannot stop crying. I am a small child again, an ocean, a big loss of stream, but Tia, as Tia has always been, is mountainous in her small stature, and it's all I need for her to be an immovable rock. To know she will still be here when I decide to come back, before I turn from her. She touches the string of beads between her breasts and then taps her fingers to my own heart, the pulse of her heart matching my own, a rhythm neither time nor oceans can make offbeat. And I know she is saying she is with me, and so are the saints. She stands in the terminal until I walk through security, gives me a nod, and I see her mouth. Que Dios te bendiga, mija. I stop moving. How can I leave her? She seems so small, alone. She is my home. I already miss her. She shakes her head, as if she can read my thoughts. She shoos me with her hands. Onward, always onward. I blow her a kiss across the linoleum and whisper blessings under my breath, divide a piece of God from my heart for her to carry. I know. She does the same for me.
As the plane from DR begins down the runway, I reach for Camino's hand. She has her head pushed into the backrest, her eyes clenched, mouthing prayers. But our fingers intertwine and do not let go until the pilot hops on the loudspeaker. He assures us the flight path is clear, tells us to enjoy the beverage service. My heart stops beating quite so hard. Camino opens her eyes, staring at the water, endless and blue beneath us. I tell her that when we land, some people on the plane might clap. She turns to me with an eyebrow raised. I imagine it's a kind of giving thanks. Of all the ways it could end, it ends not with us in the sky or the water, but together on solid earth, safely grounded. Author's note. My first memory of visiting the Dominican Republic is also my first memory of being on a flight. I was taken to visit my mother's family, many of whom I had met only once when I was 6 months old, and none of whom now, at 8 years old, I had any memories of. I was escorted on my flight by a neighbor, Doña Reina, and while I was excited, I was also so nervous, having no family I was familiar with nearby. My mother dressed me formally. A scratchy tweed-like dress and a big hat with a sunflower around the brim. This was a big deal. The flight itself scared me. Why were we in the air so long? If I slept, would they forget to collect me from the plane? What would happen if the whole thing fell? My favorite moment was when the plane landed and the other passengers clapped. Instinctively, I joined them. Even if the exact performance we were applauding was unclear, it was understood. It was praise for a higher being for allowing us to arrive safely. As a reaction to the pilot's performance, applause for ourselves at having finally returned. I didn't know then, and I don't know now, the exact reason for that spontaneous reaction. But I know I was enamored with the many ways Dominicans celebrate touching down onto our island. When I was 13 years old, 2 months and 1 day after September 11, 2001, flight AA587 crashed to the ground in Queens, New York. It was on its way to Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. 260 people plus 5 people on the ground died. More than 90% of the passengers were of Dominican descent. Many were returning home. It completely rocked the New York Dominican community. It is the second deadliest aviation crash in United States history. There was so much confusion around the November crash. I remember the special mass held at church. The bewilderment my father expressed as he read Dominican newspapers for more information. The candlelight vigils held outside the apartment buildings where passengers on that flight had lived. I also remember how little this crash was remembered when it was determined the cause was not terrorism. How quickly the news coverage trickled off. How it seemed the larger societal memory had moved on, even though the collective memory of my community was still wrestling with the loss. Throughout the years, I've circled back to the details of that flight, knowing I wanted to remember, knowing I wanted a larger narrative that commemorated that moment in time. My research led me to so many stories of individuals who were returning to the Dominican Republic to retire, to open grocery stores, to help a sick relative, or to celebrate their military leave. My research also led me to stories of people with multiple families, with large secrets, with truths that were exposed publicly and without pomp after their death. Most families are messy. Most parents will fail to live up to the hero worship of their children. In Clap When You Land, I wanted to write a story that considered who matters and deserves attention in the media, as well as a more intimate portrayal of what it means to discover secrets, to discover family, to discover the depths of your own character in the face of great loss and gain. Acknowledgements. I want to give thanks to my editor, Rosemary Brosnan, and my fantastic team at HarperTeen, including but not limited to Courtney Stevenson, Aaron Fitzsimmons, Sari Murray, Shona McCarthy, and Ebony Liddell. Thanks for helping me tell stories that deal in tenderness and immense love of my community. I want to give thanks to Joan Paquette for believing in this book and to Alexandra Machinist for her thoughtful guidance. I had fantastic beta readers who showed this story so much early love that I felt brave enough to tell it. Thanks to my bestie, Gary Santos, a million times over. She sat with this story through so many drafts and continuously gave an example for the sisterhood I wanted to forge here. Special thanks to readers, Yahaira Castro, Safia Ojillo, Clint Smith, Daniel Jose Older, Phil Bildner, and Limer Batista. Kamina and Yahaira are truer because of your keen eyes and big hearts and kinship. And shout out to Ibi Zaboy, who listened to my idea about this story when it had only one main character and said, in no uncertain terms, you need to voice the other sister. I had two mothers who helped midwife this story. Thanks to my mama, Rosa, who answered all my questions about horas santas and holistic healing and comadronas and curanderas and prayed, literally prayed, when I told her I was stuck. The answer to writer's block, in my case, seems to be my mother's supreme faith. And special thanks to my mother-in-law, Miss Sarah Cannon Moy, who talked me through so many sticky points when I was ready to throw my laptop out the window. Her patience and belief in me, as well as her tough questions, were critical to my undoing the knots in the narrative. Thank you to my family, the Amadís and Acevedos, the Paulinos and Minayas. Thank you for welcoming me in Santo Domingo and letting me be one of your own. Special thanks to the Batistas. Meeting you all at 8 years old felt like finding sisters. Shakir Aman Cannon Moy, you're my favorite. Thank you for standing beside me through both the applause and the crash landings. Ancestors, as always, I write to you, for you, with you, carrying the utmost love and reverence. Thank you for wedging open so many doorways that have led to my wildest dreams. I promise to continue walking through them.
Mm-hmm.
We hope you have enjoyed listening to Clap When You Land, written by Elizabeth Acevedo and read by Elizabeth Acevedo and Melania Luisa Marte. Clap When You Land is published by Hotkey Books, an imprint of Bonnier Books UK. Text copyright 2020 by Elizabeth Acevedo. Production copyright 2020 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for choosing a Hotkey audiobook. If you want to know more about our authors and what we publish, visit www.hotkeybooks.com.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.